He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good morning to our Car Keys listeners for this week's show with Jada Markin, Mike, and Robin. I want to start out this week's show with a safety recall, which we have avoided, thankfully, for many, many weeks up till today. And I only bring it up because I read the recall list that's published in recent this week, and one of the ones happens to be a Chrysler Stellantis corporate problem with an Alfa Romeo Tonale and a Dodge Hornet, which I've commented on. And it is a major failure if it's really active, and it's probably only active in maybe a couple of cars, if any. It's titled brake pedal failure.
That would be pretty.
That's pretty important to report to us. But the problem is, it's in a vehicle that has very low ownership going forward, because it's for the model years 2024 and 2025.
And after this comment, after these comments, is going to have even less.
Well, maybe so. But if anybody's going to buy an Alfa Romeo Tonale 224, 225, and or the Dodge Hornet, which I've commented on in a negative fashion visually, they should remember that they heard this on our Car Keys show, if they're listening, because they want to be sure that the vehicle that they drive off the lot has been fixed for whatever the brake failure pedal problem is. That's it on that. There's one other one. General Motors has got a recall on the GMC Sierra EV, which is also is probably a low ownership vehicle at this particular time this show was done. 2024 model year, the turn signals may not be visible. Well, the turn signals may not be visible is a topic that is very apparent in many, many vehicles on the road, even when they are working. And I have reported on this a couple times, but I am seeing it. I thought they would fix it by now in terms of locating the turn signals, which should be amber in all cases, and are, I believe. But they should locate them up away from the headlights and or the daytime running lights, as opposed to locating them either in the middle of vertically dual headlights, which I've seen, I think, in a couple of vehicles, or right at the bottom, right underneath the headlights, because they become invisible in many angles in different lighting situations on days, and you cannot see whether somebody has got a turn signal on when they are coming up a hill. We have an intersection on Route 41 and Wells Hill Road in our Lakeville listening area where you can be parked aiming, waiting for the traffic coming uphill to decide whether they're going to turn left in front of you before you try to move out down the hill or keep going right away from you.
I am so paranoid with that situation.
What?
I won't go through that stop sign if people know where it is.
Absolutely correct. People do not signal, for one, but even when they signal, if the sunlight is shining downhill or there's a glare of headlights at nighttime, you can't see where these amber lights are pointing in the direction that the driver is intending to go.
I understand that, and I agree with you. My point is, I'm waiting. If I see the signal on the other side, then I will go. But the oncoming traffic in that intersection is not required.
Well,
Jay, is that sometimes people put on the right light and they go left. And that's probably a dyslexia problem, but you can't fix that.
I mean, it's interesting, though.
I agree with you, Jay, at that kind of intersection. Where you have a Y intersection and you are on the stem of the Y and you are facing the Y part, it is probably best not to even go out until the car has gone up and gone by you and there is no car coming up so that you can make a safe entry on the road forward. Okay?
Okay. Can you believe it?
One of my favorite vehicles that has been out of production for a couple of years is coming back. I saw an article,
here we go.
And it's a Stellantis vehicle, one of Jay's favorite manufacturers at the moment. The Jeep Cherokee, which I happen to be ownership of three vehicles, I have always felt was one of the best vehicles out there for the purposes if you did not have a large family and just wanted a good SUV-sized vehicle going around to go around with. They took it out of the lineup, which I thought was a mistake. They kept the Compass, which is another vehicle is okay, but not terrific in my opinion. But the new Cherokee is coming back the way it should have been already out, which is in a hybrid version, a fossil fuel engine only version, and a full electric version. I don't think we're going to see it on the road till 2026 or maybe even 2027, but I'm hopeful that it will be as interesting as the old version was. And that's all on that topic for vehicle knowledge. Jay, do you have anything to chime in on this
Stellantis,
topic?
Sales are down, and Stellantis is announcing that by at the end of 2026, they will review, I think they own 14 brands between Fiat, Alfa, Maserati, Jeep, Dodge, you know, the Chrysler group here. What else do they own? Fiat, obviously.
Are they connected to any of the French brands at all? They
Peugeot.
Aren't, are they?
Peugeot was the majority, the bigger fish, if you will, when they merged. So, and that's how Carlos Tavares, who's the CEO of Stellantis, was the CEO of Peugeot, and actually did, you know, quite a good job at Peugeot, and his reviews now are mixed, as we know. But, you know, Stellantis is going to review their portfolio of brands, and they're going to start, you know, getting rid of some. And honestly, I think, well, Fiat will always stay because it's the main brand, the mainstream manufacturer in Italy.
In
that part of the group, Peugeot is doing quite well in Europe, but and probably parts of Africa, North Africa, they've historically done well, but they're kind of not very present in the rest of the world. So who knows what they will do? I'm just surprised that there are not more Peugeot platforms that underpin some of the Chrysler products, because they have really interesting vehicles in Europe, you know, like hybrid diesel, all-wheel drive, utility vehicles or SUVs, small SUVs / minivans, just interesting vehicles that sell pretty well and that look really good. But it seems like, you know, there's still this long-term connection between Chrysler and, or what was the Chrysler group and Fiat, and that's why we're seeing, you know, the Dodge Hornet, the Compass, the Jeep Compass, and those vehicles. You know, I'm not so optimistic as you are with the future of Jeep. It's still, or Dodge for that matter, they're shrinking brands, and we've seen what some of the American nameplates, how they've gone. You know, if you look at some of the GM's nameplates and Chrysler, I mean, the Chrysler car there is no Chrysler anymore. Or is there still a Chrysler 300? I'm not sure. Is there still a Chrysler?
No, I believe the 300 now no longer produced.
Okay, so and so that leaves Chrysler with what, the minivan? Is that the Pacifica still produced?
And yes, and that's been on and off, as far as I'm concerned, as to its popularity and its survivability as a result. I thought they put a very good version of that van out with the hybrid version of it, but I don't think it comes close to selling against the Honda, what is it, Odyssey? And the Toyota.
Those are reviews recently of all the minivans, and there's still a handful of them, and they've gotten better. By the way, do you know, but I'm going off topic and we can come back on topic, but have you heard about the Porsche Cayenne minivan?
No, but if it's tuned to what
Zuckerberg.
Porsche wants to do with that particular model line of cars, the way the Ford has done with the Mustang.
It's a one-off ordered by Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, for great amounts of money, of which he has. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, back to where were we?
We were talking about Chrysler and Jeeps, but
so in the Jeep lineup, I think, well, this is just my personal opinion, the Jeep should stick with their higher end vehicles. I think the Wagoneer, which is a large vehicle the size of a Navigator or a Suburban, is a good looking vehicle. I think it's a good vehicle, and I think it's selling pretty well. I mean, I see quite a few of them on the road. The Grand Cherokee and the Extended Grand Cherokee are also very nice vehicles.
Yes, they are.
Both aesthetically, and I think they perform well. And the Wrangler is the Wrangler, and I know you mentioned, I think, that the Wrangler may be going fully electric or only electric.
Well, they're working on a full electric. I brought it up from the standpoint when I asked you whether or not battery packs were safe to go through 36 inches of water and flood. And I think that the 4E version of the Wrangler, which is also a 4E version of the Grand Cherokees, are all very popular because they give you a certain amount of electric-only capacity for a vehicle that, well, in the Wrangler sense, which is very uneconomical gas-wise, miles per gallon, that is, because of the gearing and the weight of the vehicle and all that, and off-road capabilities. I mentioned in a recent show that the Bronco should be right on the tails with a 4E version, however Ford wants to title it, with their Broncos, because I look at the window sticker in a Bronco, and I am just not at all interested. As much as I loved the first Broncos, it probably didn't get as good gas mileage as the new ones do back in the 60s when I first bought my first two cars, which were both Broncos. They were wonderful, but they were gas ugly, too, in terms of use. But the gas was much cheaper. I think it's 32 cents a gallon or 28 cents a gallon when I bought the first one. And now at $3-plus dollars a gallon, and in many cases the upper-level versions want you to use premium grade in some of the upper-level engines.
I've driven the new Bronco. I mean, it's been
for a
couple years now. I actually like the vehicle. I drove it. It was a four-door with the four-cylinder turbo. It's got plenty of power. The engine is quiet. I mean, I drove it mostly on highways, like most people will do. But my big beef with it is that above 50 miles an hour, the wind noise coming from the roof, just over your head, like you hear the noise right over your ears or right over your forehead.
Was it a soft top?
It's unbearable. In my
soft top, or a hard top?
Yes, hard top.
I've heard the noise issue about that roof. I have only driven actually a soft top version of the Bronco, and it was a manual transmission, and I really liked it, and it was the four-cylinder turbo engine, which would be the only engine I would recommend for that vehicle, no matter what, whether it's an automatic or a standard. But you can't get the standard with a V6 engine anyways. But I have not had the occasion to drive it on a real highway situation to hear the noise that you claim you heard. But that would be a very big unsatisfactory problem if I owned one, and I found that because I do a lot of highway driving, as do you, if I were to drive a Bronco on the highway at 70 miles an hour and the roof was making a very annoying audible noise while driving the vehicle. But anyways, back to the Jeeps, which is where we were talking about full electric possibilities. I think full electric is going to be obviously available in most lines of vehicles until you get beyond the base level of pickup trucks, when the heavy-duty ones, I don't know whether we're ever going to get to electric heavy-duty pickup trucks and vans. But
of course we are.
Well, maybe not in my time. But miles per gallon is something that nobody really thinks about when they buy Jeeps, and they probably shouldn't have to, and Broncos and the sort. But when you go and see the sticker saying 16 miles a gallon city, maybe 19 or 20 highway, and something in between for average, most people don't, I don't think, in those vehicles get the sticker ratings. I, on the other hand, do get the sticker ratings and beyond with the Jeep Cherokees with the turbo 4 engine. And I went 160 miles in one, and I had 35.9 miles per gallon average. And with a turbo, and that included 75-mile-an-hour driving on interstate-type roads.
What platform are they going to use for that next gen?
A bigger platform. The next Cherokee is going to be longer, of course. The next level is always a little bigger. I think they titled the platform the STLA or something like that, that is undermining, I think, the Cherokees. I mean, the Grand Cherokee. But it's going to be basically just a little bit larger. You know, the Toyota RAV4s have grown, too, in the last couple of iterations of them, to a point where I think they would be too big for me. But it's going to be more or less the same size vehicle, not a lot of storage behind the rear seats, so families of four and above aren't going to want to buy them. They're going to want to buy the Grand Cherokee versions and the Traverses of the GM versions of their vehicles and that kind of size level. But the fact that they're going to be hybridized and maybe in a model all electric with maybe 300 miles per gallon. And incidentally, the new Compass is going to be built in for the U.S. in Ontario, Canada, not Melba, Italy.
So how do they go and catch up with Toyota and their number one selling RAV4?
What about it?
Well, it's the best-selling vehicle.
It is. Yes, it is. In the hybrid or in the hybrid form, it's the best, or actually as a vehicle lineup, it's the best-selling vehicle, isn't it, at that level?
Well, they have the gas-powered only, right?
And correct. They have a hybrid. And then they have a plug-in hybrid.
Yes.
So they've got those bases covered. And I know everybody that I know of, well, it's getting new ones, are trying to get the hybrid versions, whether it's a plug-in and or just the hybrid.
So maybe that's what you should consider, too.
I'm not ready to go to Toyota yet, and I'm just very happy with
what I've got. You've owned Toyotas before, haven't you?
I have, and there's nothing wrong with a Toyota. They last forever. They've been well-designed, as are the Korean versions of, you know, the Hyundais and the Kias and the Hondas. I got to tell you, the Asian countries have got their designs down, they've got their engineering down, and they stick with them. And they're doing very well in the sales department.
Talking about Hyundai and Kia, they are, I don't know if they're bigger than Honda now, but
I don't think they are yet.
At least
they may be close.
The top-ranking manufacturers are, I think, still GM again, Toyota, Ford, Hyundai, Honda, and then only Stellantis. So how does Stellantis, we're back to that. I'm not very hopeful. But anyway, you wanted to talk about tires.
Yes, I do. I recently had a flat tire occur, I believe. I told it a recent show. I mentioned
that.
And I was changing the tire, but that's not what I want to do. First of all,
want to do that.
When you go to buy tires, the new provincial wisdom or prevailing wisdom is you've got to buy four of the same tire so that you don't have different tread designs, front and rear, that might cause your car not to handle just as well as it would if it had all four tires the same. And very often, you only have to buy one tire. When you only have to buy one tire to replace a tire that is an unfixable flat caused by a nail that's in the wrong part of the tire so they can't put a plug in, You then find that you have three tires with 35,000 miles of, or 25,000 miles of use on them, and you have one tire with brand new treads. And the question is, does it make the car handle differently if you've got one brand new tire with deep tread on a front steering part of the car, and you've got old tires
well worn down?
Can you tell the difference?
You shouldn't do that. And you, left and right for sure, and there's a case to be made by front and rear, should have the same tire wear because the diameter of the tire changes. And if you
That's right. It does. Ever so little, but it does. You may have
an eighth of an inch more tread. You're putting strain on the differential if you're having, you know, tires that are, in essence, different sizes on one side from the other. So I would never change just one tire. I mean, unless your tires had just been put on, you know, a couple thousand miles ago, sure. But if they have 10, 20, 30,000 miles, if you're going to change one tire, change two. You know, it's happened to me. What I do then is then I keep that spare tire if you have, you know, space to put more junk. Keep that tire, the other half-decent tire, keep it and keep that as a spare if ever you have another tire that would...
Right. Now, let's go to that point because, as we have also said on this show, some of the new cars, or many new cars, don't come with spare tires, and or I'm not sure whether they have space in the back under the floor. In the EV cars, you probably can't do this because you may have the batteries down there, but in fossil fuel cars, you may not have a space large enough for a full-size used tire to go into and be available. What I found out with the Jeep that had the tire had full-size spare tire, but it was a 17-inch wheel, not the 18-inch which was on the vehicle that had the flat tire. And I thought I was going to be able to use the tire on the full-size spare as the fourth or the second same tread depth tire that the new tire was going to have, only to find out that it was on a 17-inch wheel and you couldn't mount it on the an 18-inch rim and put the used tire into the under the spare tire rim.
Well, those are not always a good idea either because, and remember the days when, I'm thinking of Honda CRVs because we had one for some time, you know, and, you know, you have a spare tire in the back of the car that's unprotected and it's out to the elements and it never gets used for 10 or 15 years and then someday you need it and you put it on the car. Well, that rubber is no longer anything.
Old.
Is old and you can use it as a spare, but you should pretty much not do much more than what you would do with a donut tire wheel.
Well, to that point, Jay, any spare tire that is hung underneath a vehicle on the outside is doomed to be usable if you have not used it within the first, what, maybe 2 years of its life underneath. My Eurovan is a case in point. I had a blowout a couple of years ago with a bad tire.
The brackets were probably all rusted out.
Brackets were rusted. The rim was rusted. The salt had damaged it, all that, and the tire was junk, just as you said.
You mean it looked like the rest of your van, rusted
Thank
out.
Thank you very much, Jay. The public didn't need to hear that, but public
can see it when you drive it.
But where the tires are available to be put inside in the trunk of a sedan, which are vanishing as a breed, and I do not know what the tires storage capabilities are on all the SUVs, but inside the car is not going to deteriorate the tire too badly. But if it is older than 5 years, yes, you probably shouldn't even try to use it as a spare. Located as a spare tire to be used in the future because the rubber may be dried out to a point where it would be dangerous.
I don't look at every car that I drive, but most, and luckily I don't have we don't experience many
blowouts
anymore.
That's
certainly.
Correct.
Slowly,
thank goodness.
Yes, we still have them. But tires are much better than they used to be, right? But I don't think there's a lot of full-size spare tires anyway.
But I do know some people have, let's say, a Firestone, two Firestones on the front and Goodyears on the back, and that gets back to the tread designs and
yes.
and braking capabilities, because different treads may grip the pavement differently when you apply the brakes, and you may also have different tread depths between the front and the rears. And some people still go out and buy used tires. Buying a used tire, there are used tire dealers around, and they sell used tires for people who can't afford new ones. And I do not know much about what happens when you go buy used tires, but to your point earlier, you should probably only buy used tires if you can buy all four used and put them on, but you should know something about what how old they are, and you can find out how old a tire is by looking at the sidewall where there is a date stamp molded into the rubber telling you the week and the year, I think, a tire is built.
And to that point, for people who drive very little, like I have one car that has tires that have good tread, but they're old tires.
Old.
And they're front tires, so they make me a little nervous at high speed. And, you know, I'm planning to get them replaced. I don't drive the car all that much, and just locally, but I am definitely changing those tires. So tire age is a factor to consider when looking at changing tires. So much for tires.
So much for tires. Next, Jay, it's up to you.
So I wanted to, and this is we go back to this safety tip that usually starts with a long rant from either Robin or myself about the use of lights during daytime and when conditions are not so good, right? And we've talked a lot, many times, about people not putting their lights on, whether it's raining or it's getting dark, and I agree with Robin on that point, but here's the deal. I think all these cars have different ways of setting up lights and daytime running lights, and some lights get turned on with a knob on the left side of the dashboard, and a lot of Japanese cars mostly will have the lights switch on the signal cluster toggle. On the left side. And the problem with all these light switches is typically if you're sitting in the car, you can't see the little icons on the switch. So you really have to figure it out once and memorize what those positions are. And what I find, especially with the toggles on Japanese cars, whether it's Toyota, Honda, and I don't know about the Korean manufacturers, but the positions go from lights off to, I believe,
auto,
and then
and
parking
full
lights
on
only,
and
then lights on, something to that effect. The problem is, if you leave your lights fully on, most cars nowadays will turn off the lights
in 20 minutes
when
or
you,
so.
When you shut the ignition off and you walk away from the car. But if you leave them on parking lights, they will stay on and obviously drain the battery. If the lights are off, they're off. The problem with the lights off is that you have, in most cases, no daytime running lights. And so most people just, you know, turn the switch all the way off to make sure the lights are off, and now they get back in the car the next day or whenever, and you don't have any daytime running lights.
So what's your final recommendation quickly?
Yeah,
because we're running out of time.
Running out of time.
Yes.
Put them on auto. Figure out where auto is and do not touch them ever again. And they will work just fine. You will always have lights when you need them, and they will always turn off when you get out of the car.
I leave
Sometimes
mine on
I
auto.
Sometimes I hesitate and I look at the car for a minute or two, but eventually the lights will go off. Leave the lights on auto.
Excellent. I do that. You do that. Do you do it, Robin?
I do it. Oh. All mine are set on auto.
All right, folks. Well, another edition of Car Keys.
Have a wonderful week.
Bye.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.